In culture shaping, we talk a lot about the iceberg model of looking at culture, asking ourselves what is above and below the waterline. What are the things people see and recognize immediately about our organization? And what are the things that are just as important but below the surface? After working at Work Wisdom for a year, I recognized humor as an essential part of our culture. And studies show that this might be a key to our success as practitioners in positive organizational behavior. In her HBR article, Leading with Humor, Allison Beard says, "Laughter relieves stress and boredom, boosts engagement and well-being, and spurs not only creativity and collaboration, but also analytic precision and productivity." So when we think about the ways to grow in self-awareness and self-knowledge around the topic of the Enneagram, we couldn't think of a better way to learn than to invite back a listener favorite and have an unfiltered conversation with one of the internet's funniest teachers. Welcome to The Behaviors with Work Wisdom, where we help you adopt high-performance mindsets, behaviors, communication, and culture. I'm your host, Janine James. Our intention for The Behaviors podcast is to share accessible, concrete practices that you can weave into your whole life to begin a shift toward joy and meaningful achievement. Today, we're turning our focus on the Enneagram. I'm grateful to have Liz Orr joining me, the meanie behind Rude Ass Enneagram. Liz Orr describes herself as a belligerent chaplain type with a colorful set of tattoos and a colorful vocabulary to match. In October of 2022, Liz and I discussed the Enneagram and the main centers. This is when I decided that Liz is one of my favorite people. And if you're not familiar with Liz or her Instagram page at RudeAssEnneagram, you can go back and listen to that episode. Liz, I'm so happy to have you with me today.
Janine, I am so delighted to be here, and the favorite people award.
Yes, this is an award that I'm going to be honest with you. It's not that hard to win, but I generally do like a lot of people, but I will say you won it the quickest. Can I say that?
I'll take it. A win is a win.
There are people listening right now who are like, you said I was your favorite person. And I think after reading your book that I'm not alone in that version of the two. That this is just how we roll through life.
It is. It's a beautiful thing. And has the underside of the iceberg.
Yes. I had the privilege for the listeners. I had the privilege of getting an advanced reader's copy of Liz's book, The Unfiltered Enneagram, A Witty and Wise Guide to Self-Compassion. And I'm very excited to speak with you today because we spoke over a year ago. And I don't want to say that I'm psychic or anything, but I did say, when you have your book tour, I'm going to be the first in line and I'm going to get a personalized message. I don't know what presumption led me to say that, but you're doing personalized messages with these pre-orders.
I am. You can order it through Bookmarks. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, we're doing personalized snarky messages in the books.
And I forgot about that. And now I have the advanced reader's copy. I still pre-ordered my book and I'm looking forward to my snarky message. But it's been over a year since we last spoke. How are you and what have you been up to?
I'm really great. The last year I've been immersed in book world. About a year ago, I was still writing, over a year ago, I was still writing, and chugging along at my chaplain-like job. Just kind of getting ready for this beast to be released into the world in April.
Yeah. I need to know, how hard is it to write a book? Is it as hard as everyone says? Or are you just, this book is so well written, you might have just done this quite easily. You make it sound easy. Was it as easy? And are you as awesome at writing just naturally, or did it take a lot of sweat equity?
Yes, and. It's First of all, what I'll say is that a book is not written by one person. I had an incredible editor. I had amazing copywriters that made sure the book was really polished and strong. It's not all me. There's a lot of brilliance reflected from other people in the book too. And there were days where I had several pages worth of things to write. And there were days where if I could pull a paragraph out of myself, I was lucky. Mm-hmm. So I definitely had this notion going in that like writing a book is this romantic practice where you're and then you write through the night. And like, that just never happened. It was a matter of showing up and chipping away and kind of going like, all right, this is what I've got today. And that's what it's going to be. And to a degree, it was a little bit of flying the plane while you're building it too, because, I had written a proposal. And so I had a very vague sketch of how it was going to look, but really until the last couple of months, it didn't start to take real, real shape. So it comes together the more that you write. And, you know, as I was writing in one chapter, I was like, oh, I need to make sure this happens in all of the chapters. So it's a funny process. It's a weird day by day process.
That's really great. Now, something that I appreciated about the way that this is structured is that the eight comes first in the roasting. And was that purposeful, or is it because of the way that you structure it in terms of the centers? Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of both. A lot of traditional Enneagram teachers, when they teach the Enneagram, when they write about it, they do start with those centers.
Okay.
And it's so funny, on Instagram, I also frame a lot of my posts around the centers, and the type ones are always on me. They're like, I know you're putting us last to make us mad, but it's not that. It's you have to start. I think the centers make a lot of sense when we talk about the different types within them. Mm-hmm. And so I like to keep them together, and you can't start in numerical order and start with one, because you're starting at the back end of the gut center. Mm-hmm. So I started with the gut center with type eight, and kind of worked my way around that way. And to some degree, there is also a little bit of, it was more like frosting on the cake, that like, all right, well, Liz is a type eight. She's starting type eight to like show that she's really not taking any prisoners.
And, yes.
You know, she's not here to like apologize for eights.
Exactly.
To build my credibility a little bit, I think the order helps.
I think so too, because, you know, I read your section first and then I read my section, and I don't know if you would still be one of my most favorite people if I hadn't done it in that order, because I read my section. Now, full disclosure, the last time we spoke, I was convinced I was a three. And part of that is because I still am focused on that high achieving and that shape shifting, but I started to realize some of my core motivations behind it, and maybe some mm-hmm. of those core beliefs behind it. And something that I really appreciated is after we had our conversation, I hadn't taken my, at Work Wisdom, we have different assessments for building self-awareness, and each person who works at Work Wisdom has to take those assessments to know what our clients go through, to know about ourselves. If we're going to ask it of other of our clients, it's pretty good if we do it for ourselves as well. So I hadn't taken the Enneagram yet, because it was like a month of me working at Work Wisdom when we spoke. So I took it, found out I was a two, and it started to become a lot clearer, even about some of the ways that like twos go to eight in stress, and realizing that why do I love eight so much and relate to them and enjoy having them around? Often because you all are saying exactly what I want to say, but I'm passive aggressively baking into a cupcake.
Yep.
You know, y'all are just saying it outright, and I'm like spelling it out on a cake with like, colored icing for the girls to get. So learning that about myself was really helpful. However, I read in your book, and I think it's kind of true, you said that twos are often mistyped, that they're very likely to mistype. And then I also noticed that two and three are still in the heart center. So a lot of what you were saying still resonates. I still feel those feelings. Actually, just to kind of read a little section of your book where you talk about the heart center. And every time I do it, I have like all this deep breath work. Like I have all these deep sighs and gasps. Like you saw, I was like, oh, here we go. Because it's a lot of vulnerability, folks. You said that the heart center is the warm, relational, and impermanent in their sense of self, seeking it out in their relationship and relationships and roles. These types are haunted by the questions, who am I, and is that person worthy of love?
I know.
You can't see it right now, but I have my hand over my heart, knocked over, bowled over by that statement. And so both twos and threes are in that heart center. And I was wondering if you could kind of give a little bit of an idea of how, if you could explain, because you explained me to me in this book better than I have ever been able to articulate myself. And so I was wondering if you could help me kind of explain how someone could mistype as a three if they are a two. Maybe what are some of the similarities and what are some of the differences?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. So those heart center types, which two, three, and four are all a part of, the way that they are so similar is, and the way I like to talk about this is, they have this like heart that is magnetically drawn outward. Mm. It's tuned to the outside world. And particularly where twos and threes look very similar in their attunement is they are really good at like honing in on the person in front of them and making them feel loved, cared for, seen, right? They both do that so well. The two does that really well because they desire to make people feel really loved. The three does that because they desire to reflect the value of the person in front of them. Now, we're talking about the high side of the two and the three right now. The low side of the two is acting peace. The two wants to be assured of their lovability, that they kind of do that by making the other person feel loved. The three is going to do that by impressing the other person. Look at what I can bring to your life. Look how valuable I can make you feel, and look how I'm shining on you, and I'm so impressive. I would say one of the real stark differences between the two and the three is in their relationships. Twos are much more attentive to the maintenance of their relationship. Mm-hmm. If something's going wrong, that sets off a radar in the two, like, oh no, I have to do something to bridge the gap. The three, if their relationships start to feel like there's something wrong, that feels like a failure to the three. They're gonna get as far away from that as they can. They might do some image control, but relationships, especially ones that are tough, can make the three feel like a failure, which is a really devastating blow to the three. So they will sometimes like really avoid or kind of compartmentalize themselves away from their relationships to prioritize the thing that makes them look good.
That's a really helpful explanation, because that was where I got my realization that I am, a lot of my high performance is because of my interconnectivity to the folks next to me. Like, I'm doing well here because I want all of us to do well, and I want the business to do well, and I want this person. Right. I want to do well because my family, I want to, you know, model and also be a good example for, you know, others who come before me and behind me. So that consideration of relationships and always looking at things to the grid of that was helpful. But something else that was helpful in your book, in I believe it was the overview, was the way you suggested folks begin to discern their type. And you reference the Essential Enneagram written by David N. Daniels and Virginia A. Price. And then you suggested that folks try the idealized self-image and yes. ask some questions around that first. And could you yep. just reiterate why you thought it would be a little easier to start there?
Yeah, for sure. I think the whether we're conscious of it always or not, I think right under the surface, we have some sense of how we want the world to see us. Mm-hmm. Some sense of this is how I want to be known. Mm-hmm. And that sense, that version of ourselves, there is ample evidence for why we need to be that way. I think what the Enneagram does well is it names the neighborhood in which we fall, the neighborhood of the two, the neighborhood of the three, the neighborhood of the eight. But there is something really powerful about putting our own language mm-hmm. to it, which is why I think giving people the opportunity to reflect on who they think they have to be in order to be loved, who they have to, they think they have to be in their relationships, who they think they have to be to make it through the day. I think that's a really powerful way to name and give language to your idealized self-image, this facade and survival strategy, which then helps us unpack, okay, what evidence do you have for that? How did you come to believe that you have to be this way? And again, that gets at our core belief, our core fear. And it really fleshes out what the Enneagram lays a framework for.
I was so impacted while I was reading this. I kept reading this and truly gasping, going, oh my God. Because it really kind of punches you in the chest, just the sheer weight of the questions that were asked. Under idealized self-image, one of the questions was, who do I think I have to be in my relationships? Who do I think I have to be to get my needs met? What role did I play in my family of origin? Liz, I follow you on Instagram, and you did a story instructing folks and kind of as a disclaimer to folks saying, listen, I want you to know this is very helpful to grow in self-awareness, but I am not a licensed clinical professional. And it needed to be said, Liz, because these yes. are some therapeutic questions.
Yes. Bring this stuff to therapy. Bring this stuff to a licensed counselor. Absolutely. I'm just asking the questions.
Yeah.
Y'all done. But yeah, it is important. I think sometimes with, you know, social media mm-hmm. stuff, we can give someone more expertise than they have. And I really, as much as I like being a clown on there, I also want to be ethical mm-hmm. and responsible for the fact that people are trusting me with what is very tender and very meaningful in their lives. And so I think it's important for, you know, in that moment, I had gotten a couple of submissions in a question and answer box that were questions I was wholly unequipped to actually answer with any kind of authority.
But I think it's because there is so much insightfulness in, I don't know if that's a word, but there's so much insight. You're so insightful about how you work through these and flesh these out, and the recognition of these different types, it's so clear that I think it's understandable that someone would start to feel like, oh my goodness, this is like a therapy session, because they're seeing themselves. Yeah. A lot of what talk therapy does is allowing you to see things clearer, see yourself more clearer, you know, clearly see the world more clearly. I one of my questions is about, in writing this, how did you do it so well? I you know, I want to know, because I listeners, you didn't hear this, but before we got on this call, we had a little chance to chat, and I called Liz out for a fair one because I read my chapter and it was so scarily accurate. I mean, and it was not even, you know, one of the things you said is that the twos have kind of gotten the reputation for being the sweetheart and just being like, we're just love everybody. We're just the Care Bears of the Enneagram. And she broke it all the way down, even down to the reason why we are the way we are. And it wasn't to give an excuse, but it was really helpful. You said you have earned love by being self-sacrificing, giving, and intuitively caring. People have relied on you to take care of them, and your need to be seen and appreciated has been met by being so willing to go the extra mile to make someone feel loved. I said, yes. Has Liz been reading my diary? What is she doing? How did you come across such a clear and multidimensional descriptions of all of these types? Is this through your experience in relationships? I was very curious because it's not, I mean, your Instagram is its own set of talent because brevity is a soul of wit. And so collecting these ideas and memes is talented and masterful, but you even say yourself it's a little one-dimensional.
Oh yeah.
What was impressive about this book is that three-dimensional, at once brutal and on the other hand very compassionate, you know. How did you achieve that?
Editors, right? especially where there were, you know, I mean, don't tell anyone this, but I actually am a softy. really and truly, I think what has made the Enneagram three-dimensional for me is in becoming, not only in my trainings, I've had some formal training in the Enneagram as a practitioner, and then in the work that I've done, and just as, again, being this sort of like person that people now associate the Enneagram with, people are really generous in sharing their experience. And so I've had the privilege of hearing and witnessing a lot of people's reflection as they're engaging the material and sort of naming for themselves where they're tracking. Okay, here's where my fear has been triggered, and here's where I see that playing out. You know, the other thing is I really and truly believe that we don't do anything in life, we don't do anything that we don't believe in the moment is somehow serving us. We're not self-sabotaging out of a desire to self-sabotage. It's a mechanism. It's nothing that we do developed in a vacuum. Like I said, the two has earned so much love for their selflessness, for the way they go the extra mile. That didn't just appear in the two's head someday. One day, it really, they've been reinforced by the external world that this is how I assure myself that I am worthy of love. And I think that that's such an important piece to contact the compassion that we need to face this stuff. Because it's so indicting, it's so confronting. And I think I write about this in the book. For the two in particular, it is devastating when they wake up to some of these patterns. It is, I mean, like, I've heard of twos, you know, crying for days when they're on a retreat because, oh my God, like, look how destructive I can actually be and manipulative and whatever, right? So you need that compassion because otherwise we just get mired in shame and we don't move anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, a big part of it too, just for that vulnerability's sake, is that if you are because you are in many ways seeing yourself as a martyr, to see yourself just as messed up as the rest of the numbers in and of itself is a shock, much less your own deeper motivations behind it. It's like you're bringing yourself down another level. And for, you know, what also resonated was just kind of coming to the virtue. You know, you move through the central Enneagram and you said this is the, you know, the essence and core beliefs and kind of moving through it and how to get to virtue. And what you wrote, you did. And it's funny, I guess I didn't even get to. No, I did. I did get to the full pattern breaking. But one of the things that you brought through was that humility was really helpful. And I loved your definition of humility that you quoted. You said humility is being both no more and no less than exactly who we are. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And so the great thing about it, to give the listeners a little sneak peek, is that the book does take you through, and in that introduction you mentioned, it does focus a lot on that shadow side, which is different from a lot of the work I've encountered around Enneagram has been primarily positive. It's been a different ratio, right? Like maybe 60% positive. Maybe 40% or 70% positive, maybe 30% negative. And you've kind of flipped it a bit in this.
Yep.
But we do end on that hopeful note of virtue.
Yeah.
And
then
we also get to, from baby steps to badass pattern breaking. And each chapter has the steps to breaking the patterns of your toxic numbers behavior. And I'm going to tell you, those baby steps.
Truly, baby, you're really wobbly initially.
You're quite wobbly initially. You're quite wobbly. And it was interesting because I hope you don't mind, while we were sitting in the green room, I spoke with someone about what I was going to be talking about. And I said, you know, there's this really hard pattern breaking thing that Liz wrote in her book. And she says that someone you love is going to ask you for a non-urgent favor soon. And the next time you do, give yourself 24 hours to consider. And I'm like, already that's so hard. Now, let me tell you, Liz, the person I was speaking to was an 8. And they looked at me like, what? And then I said... And then what you wrote in your book, if you really do have the bandwidth and energy, you got to consider that 24 hours is to consider your bandwidth and energy. I underline this, by the way, so you can see through our Zoom screen. And I said, do I have the bandwidth and energy? And then 3 points. Liz writes, if and only if you have the time, the energy, and the will to release any presumption that they should return the favor in a equivalent measure, then you can say yes.
Gotta have all three, baby.
And you gotta have all three. I said, I have to have all three?
Yep.
Oh my goodness. And it's funny because it's going to be a challenge. I'm going to have to do that. And then for, you know, the 8 that I read this to, they said, that's going to be a challenge, Janine? And I said, yeah. But the 8 has their own baby steps to badass pattern breaking.
Yes. Yes, they do.
So if you could say what your hopes for the reader would be in picking up this book, because this took a lot of work, and I read it and I have engaged with it and I'm just delighted. Also kind of got my feelings hurt, and that's fine. But I really sense a lot of love and care and effort into this work. What is your hope for people to gain when they pick up this work as a companion to the other works that you've referenced?
So a couple of things. I hope that on an intellectual level, I hope that they come to understand the function of the Enneagram, and they understand it as a tool and a support system for us. And but, you know, on a heart level, what I hope is that they see that we have a shadow side. We all do. And that shadow side has been our survival strategy. And to meet that shadow side with compassion and humor, because I really believe those are the only two, like, that's the only way to wriggle free from it. Mm-hmm. And to understand that none of the work that we do is linear. Mm-hmm. And the Enneagram will meet us where we are in every season of our life, and it will check us right in the gut at every point. Like, there's no kind of point where the Enneagram is done with us. But what I really hope is that it's a way to inspire courage. Mm-hmm. In the self-reflection process, courage and compassion, and allow that to then kind of open you up to compassion for others too, as you read their stuff and laugh about it and hold it lightly.
This is such a helpful tool to add to, you know, your study for the listener. I strongly encourage you to check this out, because I think we we talked briefly about the way the two is described in dating, and Liz sagely said how you do one thing is how you do, I can't remember, I'm trying to quote you,
how you do anything is how you do everything, and I'm quoting someone much wiser than me.
And it was wise, and it was sage. And so I think that even as we take a look, as you look at yourself through this, it's not just related to one scenario of your life, your personal life, your work life, but it can apply to different areas. That self-reflection, that courage can really help in all your relationships.
Yeah. And I think it's so important, and I hope that this comes across too, that I think that it's so courageous to reflect and to take honest account of ourselves. That it's hard, but it's so courageous, and a lot of people don't do it because mm-hmm. it's so scary. And so if you are nominally aware of the Enneagram and are, you know, I think that there's such courage in that. So I think that's where a lot of my love for all of the types comes in too, is just that, you know, there's so much courage in being honest with ourselves. And so if you're willing to engage with this book, then you're doing some incredible work already.
You are. Well, Liz, thank you so much for joining me today and talking to me about this book. Where can everyone find you? On the interwebs, and let's give them a call to action about this latest work of yours.
Yeah, so you can follow me for free shenanigans on Rude-Ass Enneagram on Instagram. I am on TikTok, but TikTok is more of a like video editing software for me, so don't expect. And then in terms of where to buy the book, you can buy it anywhere you like. Amazon sells it, Barnes & Noble, wherever. But I am doing a really special exclusive offer through Bookmarks, which is my local bookstore and literary arts nonprofit where I live in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And you can order through them to get a personalized and signed copy. So you'll order through their pre-order form. They will send you a form and you can tell us what type you are. And I will then handwrite in a snarky note based on your type, and we'll ship it out and it'll get to you on April 2nd when the book releases. So very excited for that. Additionally, the book will be in Kindle format and audiobook as well. So lots of different ways to get it if paper is not your thing.
I am so excited for that. And I already pre-ordered my copy, so I look forward to my message. And absolutely. I'm so grateful to you, Liz, for being a part of this movement of helping others in the workplace to enhance their individual and collective team performance. Thank you, listeners, for downloading The Behaviorist, and we hope you'll subscribe. Please contact us through our website, workwisdomllc.com, where you can enjoy Work Wisdom Press and Productions and ask questions and suggestions of topics you'd like us to explore in future episodes. As is our custom, we will leave you with a quote. Today's is from Rainer Maria Rilke. Be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then, gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer.